This morning, as the coronavirus spreads, so do concerns that people of privilege are able to access testing while average Americans can't.
Today on Vox Talks, did celebrities really get preferential COVID testing in New York? Welcome to Vox Talks from the Center for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. On the 18th of March 2020, the New York Times ran the headline, "Need a coronavirus test? Being rich and famous may help." Turn on the news at that time and you'd see stories about how sports teams and social influencers were getting priority for tests, while minimum wage workers waited in line or couldn't get tested at all. A team of researchers from Columbia University analyzed the data on whether being rich really did mean you were more likely to get tested for COVID-19. Stephanie Smith-Garohe is one of those researchers, and I spoke to her about what she learned. But first of all, with Columbia University right at the heart of New York's devastating outbreak of COVID-19, I asked her how she was.
Thank God we are all well. We are all at home spending many hours in Zoom and using our time to go to the park and cooking.
Zoom is where we live nowadays, isn't it? Can you explain for anyone who didn't see these news reports how this issue blew up in the US during March and April? New York in particular, wasn't it?
Yes, I mean, New York turned out to be the hardest hit state and the hardest hit city in the United States. Maybe it's hard to recall by now, but by March 1st, the city had one positive case. The state had, I think, five positive cases. By March 18, when this headline ran in the New York Times, the city had 1,000 cases. By April 3rd, where our data is mainly from, the city had 50,000 cases. And now we are at over 150,000 recorded cases.
And the suspicion was that the rich and the famous were getting preferential treatment.
As you said in your intro, that particular headline ran after a bunch of sports teams have been tested. But it made us think about, should income be a determinant of whether you get a test? And it's very difficult to come up with a story where you say income should be in a systematic way related to being tested for coronavirus. When on April 2nd, New York City started releasing data at a more granular level about tests and about test outcomes. We just wanted to ask, is there a correlation or any association between income and being tested? I mean, what should be the criterion to be tested? It shouldn't be income. It should be if you're sick, if you're likely to make other people sick.
Yes, exactly. Because President Trump was asked in one of his press conferences about unequal treatment.
Or non-symptomatic professional athletes getting tests while others are waiting in line and can't get them. Do the well-connected go to the front of the line?
Well, that you'd have to ask them that question. I mean, I've read. No, I wouldn't say so, but perhaps that's been the story of life.
But during a pandemic, it's not just an issue of fairness or the bad luck of being poor, is it? There's much more at stake if you are sick and can't get tested.
Well, from a public health point of view, what you would like is that the people who are sick and therefore can make other people infected, that these are the people who are tested, because then you can tell those people, please self-isolate. And if you have a positive test, I think you are much more likely to be compliant. Of course, the recommendation by mid-March was, if you think you might have the test because you have a sore throat, you have a headache, please stay home and behave as if you have the test. But from a public health point of view, you need to limit the number of people that one infected person can spread the virus to. And I think for stopping that spread, the information that you're actually positive is going to make you comply the best.
You set out to analyze this, but you can't know the income of every individual who's being tested. So how did you go about this?
Well, first of all, as you say, we would love to know the income of all 8.4 million New Yorkers and sort them by income. We don't know this. And we would like to know who's tested. So this is the data we have. We know from the U.S. Census Bureau, average income per capita. So that's income per every person in a zip code, for children, adults, everything. And so that's a zip code. How big is a zip code? A zip code can have 2,000 people. A zip code can have 30,000 people. In New York City, there are 177 zip codes. So we know the average per person income in each zip code. So why are we attracted to the zip code level? Because that is the most granular level at which we know how many people were tested and how many people were positive. Just to be clear, positive doesn't mean good news. Positive means bad news, means that you have the virus. So we have to make an assumption. We are assuming that every single person in the zip code makes the same income as the mean per capita income in a zip code.
Does that mean that you actually end up with enough variation to make a meaningful result from this?
Okay, so the mean per capita income across zip codes, there's a lot of variation across the 177 zip codes. You can go from $12,000 at the poorest zip code to $150,000 per person per year at the highest zip code. So there is variation. The concern, of course, is that within each zip code, there's also a lot of inequality, and we have no way of knowing who within the zip code gets tested. So we can see a little bit what happens if you look at inequality of income across zip codes and inequality of all New Yorkers. You know that this Gini coefficient, which sort of measures how unequal income is distributed for all New Yorkers, is 0.55. And the Gini coefficient for income inequality just across zip codes, where we treat everybody within a zip code having the same per capita income, goes down to 0.32. And Gini coefficient of 0 would mean full equality, and a Gini coefficient of towards 1 would mean massive inequality. So 0.55 means much more inequality than 0.32. So we do know that by making the assumption that everyone within the zip code makes the same income, we are losing quite a bit of inequality. But given the possibilities we have, that we think we can still learn something from this data.
Did you decide that tests were distributed proportionally, regardless of income in New York?
Yeah, so what we then do is we construct something which is called a Lorentz curve. I sought the 8.4 million New Yorkers by income. And then I ask, okay, did the bottom 10%, which fraction of all the tests administered do they get? And we find a relatively even distribution. The bottom 10% get 10% of the tests. The middle 50% of the income distribution got about 50% of the tests. The top 10% got 11% of the tests. So it's almost equal. The Gini coefficient for test distribution is 0.02, which is, for all practical purposes, zero. And it is much, much closer to zero than the income distribution of across zip codes, which is 0.32. So we were almost a little bit surprised how egalitarian the tests were distributed. It doesn't mean this is efficient. It doesn't mean that it is fair. It just means that the bottom 10% by income of New Yorkers got the same number of tests as the top 10% by income. So being rich and famous, does it help? On this narrow view of who got the tests by income, we would say actually it was rather egalitarian, the distribution.
Okay, well, let's broaden that view a little bit, because that is good news. But if poor people were more likely to have COVID-19, this could still be an inequality, couldn't it? They'd still be getting too few tests.
Yes. I mean, so you have to ask yourself, tests are rationed. What is an efficient way to allocate tests? What are the objectives in allocating this very scarce good, the test? You, from a public health point of view, you want to tell the people who have it you are actually positive so that they self-isolate. You also want that the people who are positive and will get sick, which is not the majority of the people, to come to the hospital earlier. Another logical thing is to say maybe a good way to allocate tests is by incidence, meaning by the share of people in the population who have it. So then the question, everyone would love to know what is the incidence of coronavirus in the population. We would love to know, is it true that, say, the bottom 10% of the population are more infected with coronavirus than the top 10%. To know this, we would really need to have random testing because there are a lot of selection issues. Getting a test is difficult. And so how do you get selected into having a test? Maybe you don't want to go and have a test. You say, I need to go to work. I'm not feeling that bad. I really need to make that money. I don't go. Or the hospital in your neighborhood puts the implicit cost of getting a test very high by saying you need a queue for 4 hours. So we don't know incidence, but we can use our data to at least put some bounds on incidence. So we can say, suppose it was true that conditional on you having the coronavirus, your chance of being tested is independent of income. So if you have coronavirus, the chance that you get tested is the same for a rich and a poor person. Then our data can be interpreted as saying that the incidence in the population of the bottom 10% was 50% higher than the incidence of the top 10% of the population. And then if we go back to your question, who should be tested and if testing should be proportional to incidence, we would say that the bottom 10% should have been tested at a much higher rate. They should have given 50% more of the tests than the top 10%.
And so using the data that you have, is there any way to investigate this? Were you able to find anything out about that?
Then we say, do we interpret this as an upper or a lower bound? And we find reasons to think it might be an upper bound because we go through this thought experiment. We say, suppose to get a test and you live in a poor neighborhood, you need to report a sore throat and fever and a headache. But if you live in a rich neighborhood, all you need to do is to show fever, say. Then, given that you have corona, who gets tested more, the person with the three symptoms or the person with just one? Well, the person with the three symptoms will get the test more easily because you're selecting more for corona. So under that logic, the probability of getting tested conditioned on you having corona should be higher for the poor. And in that case, this 50% would be an upper bound.
Should we support this conclusion that testing was fair in New York, or do we have enough information to say that testing was perhaps not fair and to say that being rich actually does matter in New York? How much can we say from what you were able to find out?
Just to be clear, we say nothing about fair. Fair has a lot of meaning.
Of course, yes.
We just basically have two main results. One is to say it was egalitarian, the distribution of tests. Egalitarian is not fair. As I just said, if incidence is higher in the poor population, then in some sense, egalitarian administration of tests is inefficient. You should allocate tests where incidence is. And we do see another thing we haven't really touched upon. Another thing we show is that the outcome of the tests is differently distributed across income groups, especially the top 10% richest tend to get a positive test result much less often than the bottom 10%. So given that you're tested, the odds of getting a positive test are twice as large for the bottom 10% than for the rich percent. So there are ways of interpreting this, if we want to use the word you suggested, fair, that this was not right. It should be that the odds of getting a certain test results back, if the way the test is administered is uncorrelated with income, we shouldn't see that difference. But we cannot say whether it's the health administration who's doing the selection against the poor, or maybe the poor are selecting themselves because, as I said, they work in more exposed jobs. They drive the bus. They work in the grocery store. They work in the subway system as conductors. So they're more exposed. It could also be that they don't get tested because it takes time out of your life to get tested. So there are all these selection issues.
What you were able to conclude from the data you have and what you can't conclude because you don't have the data, it really shows how important random testing in a pandemic like this is. It enables us to be able to make some conclusions about access to healthcare, doesn't it? Which otherwise, as you say, it is very hard to conclude anything other than a very limited set of results on who got the tests and who didn't and how that was distributed.
But I think it is of interest. There's very little reason to believe that there should be a systematic correlation with income unless you would think that the rich people, because they shake more hands, have a higher incidence, right? So I think the fact that we do show the results that we have that let us conclude that incidence should be much higher in the poor says, from that criterion at least, the poor should have been tested more than proportionally. So I think that is something we can learn.
Very interesting and actually surprisingly encouraging as well in this. We're looking for good news. There's not a lot about, and this does seem to be some good news. Stephanie, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for giving us a chance to present our research.
The paper we were discussing is called COVID-19, Testing Inequality in New York City. Authors are Stephanie Schmidt-Grohe, Ken Teo, and Martin Uribe. It is in issue 8 of COVID Economics, a free download from VoxEU. And don't forget to keep up with all the COVID-19 coverage at VoxEU. We're adding to it every day with articles, podcasts, videos, and webinars. This has been a Vox Talk from the Center for Economic Policy Research. If you want to hear more, subscribe on your podcast platform. We're on all of them. And at voxeu.org/vox-talks, you'll find 10 years of Vox Talks archive.